Welcome back to the Hoops Temple podcast. Y'all know me, Nathan Schwartz. Joining me from Sacramento, Aaron Schroeder.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Playoff basketball is here.
And join us from New Zealand, Dylan Williamson.
Good stuff. Good mornings, gentlemen.
Dylan, how is your morning going? You got to wake up, watch the Clippers just put the smackdown on Dallas.
Yeah, got to get up bright new. Why the hell is this game so early? Like, isn't it like early afternoon in the US? Why are they playing so early? Like, give me a break, guys. But yeah, an incredible game. Sorry, I was a little bit late. I had to, you know, lie in bed and have a cigarette after the game. But an excellent game from the Clippers. Happy as can be. Let's get one going. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Is that good for you? Is that good for it's you? Like, it was good for me.
It's like 10 a.m., but you know.
Oh, I missed the game. It's at my mother-in-law's birthday. So what went right? What did the Clippers do well? What if this was repeatable? What if this is not repeatable?
Biggest thing is that the commentators did bring up some sort of rust versus rest. And early on, it seemed like the two teams were sort of on two different wavelengths, where the Clippers were very much locked in. Ty Lue really emphasized urgency in this game one, whereas the Mavs seemed a little bit casual, very, a sort of regular season approach early on. And they definitely got it together later in the game. But I think one thing that stood out was a whole lot of mismatches and maybe issues in roster construction, where Dallas's best defenders weren't able to make shots. And so they went to offensive lineups later, and that presented a lot of defensive difficulties. So guys like Derek Jones Jr. and Dante Exum, who were good defenders, really couldn't contribute. The Mavs scored, what was it, like 8 points in the second quarter, playing some of those defensive guys. And so they struggled to find two-way contributors. And so that's something that they're going to have to figure out. What isn't maybe as much of a concern if you're the Mavericks is the disparity in three-point shooting. The Clippers guys, particularly from the role players, were able to knock down three-point shots at a high clip, whereas the Mavericks really weren't. And that carried over even to like free throws. They missed a lot of free throws. And so that's something that is rectifiable.
I had predicted the Mavs to win the series in seven, and I'll just say, like, what a shock, what a massive shock. Like, I think this is like the hot take series. Like, it was like, man, Dallas is playing great, the Clippers have like had these issues over the past month or so, and it's like Clippers and Dallas in five or Dallas in six, and like Luka's gonna tear them apart like he has in the past. I don't think anyone really accounted for Dallas to play like the worst game of the season, like their worst first half of the entire year. Especially with the Kawhi
the last 5 years.
It was the lowest scoring playoff half for Dallas in their franchise's history, just 30 points. And with no Kawhi, it was like, oh my God, like Dallas in four, like let's really hop on this. And then you check the score and you're like, or you're watching the game, like this is unreal. There's a game with Luka and Kyrie Irving and Paul George, and it's James fucking Harden. He's the best player on the floor. I thought it was incredible. And I think, like, in the NFL, you get, like, the Taylor Swift shots in the Chiefs games. Clippers games, you get Kawhi Leonard in hoodies. It's like, every time something that the Clippers did something, they'd, like, cut back. And it's like, Kawhi Leonard's not playing. Like, wow, what's going on?
You know, this is where you would expect James Harden to have an awesome game. When the other star is out, when there is no pressure. Like, last year with Philadelphia, when Embiid was down, I forget what round that was. It was the Eastern semis. Harden had really good games. Harden came to play, and then as soon as Embiid came back, and as soon as, like, all right, now we can close it out, now we have a chance, that's when he shit the bed. So, like, I guess I'm not super shocked to see Harden do this, but as someone who's watching the game on my phone, you know, trying to check back in, like, there was a point in the third quarter where Dallas's field goal percentage was 29% for the game, and their three-point percentage was 19. So, like, they finished at 39 and 30. They had a good fourth quarter. This game, just like from start to finish, though, so heavily Clippers. We've seen a lot in group chats about how dominant Zubac was. How do you feel to have the second best big man in the Western Conference?
didn't I call him like a top three rim protector last week? But Zubac's praises has been high on this podcast.
I was thinking we were going to have the poster collection, the, you know, Derek Jones Jr. dunk on him, the Lively dunk on him, and the Daniel Gafford. I'm still saying the collection may happen. We may get three great posters on him, but at least for today, it sounds like he was one of the big winners, just a big recipient of the Harden pick and rolls.
Yeah, like that was one of the issues. They, came up with a pretty interesting foil late. Because early on, obviously, when James Harden is on the ball and you get screen and roll action, like that's what he does, those drop-off passes to Zubats and finding the shooters in the corner who knock down shots, which was a big key for this. In the fourth quarter, they went to something quite interesting, which was having Luka guard Harden as the primary assignment, which meant that it sort of deterred him from running pick and roll, where if you bring in a screen, all of a sudden you're bringing in a better defender. And so it went to a lot of James Harden one-on-ones where he was able to beat Luka pretty much every single time. But it seemed like Jason Kidd was willing to give up that initial advantage in exchange for having better defense behind the play.
Do you remember when the way to defend Harden was to have a defender behind him and like send him in, and that was all the rage for like 5 days, and then Harden just started smoking it, and everyone was like, oh yeah, that was really dumb. That's kind of how what I feel like. All right, we're gonna put the worst defender on Harden so that way he can't use a pick and roll, because there's no reason to use pick and roll. Like that's how that feels in my mind.
Yeah, and Luka did spend a lot of time behind James Harden as Harden was able to blow by him time after time.
All right, well, if you're Dallas, what are three adjustments you try to make to even up the series looking at game two?
The easiest one is like just make shots, right? Luka started out very cold, struggled to get buckets, struggled with playing on the front foot, playing with initiative. And so getting Luka going early, I think, is important. You know, he did a lot of his scoring in the fourth quarter where they went to Russell Westbrook on him, which wasn't a good matchup. I hope that, you know, Ty Lue won't go too much back to that. So making shots, getting Luka going early. Kyrie is the guy that's got probably the big advantage. Terrence Mann is the Clippers' best perimeter defender. Paul George isn't going to take those assignments, definitely early in the series. And so it's Kyrie that's got the biggest mismatch, and I thought he was going to be the X factor. And so he's got to be better. The other thing, though, is offensive rebounding for the Clippers. Like, the numbers don't look that high. It was only 10 offensive rebounds, but when you consider that the Clippers didn't miss too many shots during the competitive portion of the game, it seemed like whenever Dallas were able to get a good defensive play, a good defensive stop, they weren't able to get the glass under control, which was a result of playing smaller. So the guards need to be better, I feel like, on the back line.
Solid. What does Miami need to do to get back in this against Boston?
In their season, roll over. I think that's going to be the closest game of this series. It was 20 points, and I think each loss is going to get significantly worse. I predicted a Celtics sweep. How many wins out of regular season does this Heat team get without Butler? Is this a 32-win team, like a 34-win team?
You know, Butler missed a fair amount of time these last couple of years, and they still managed to limp in around 500.
What if he missed all of it? It's just they're not going to be able to. The Heat are going to get to 90 points, and everything else is a gift. And the rest of that is going to be, Boston's going to get to 100, 110 pretty easily. It's not a fair matchup, and Boston is statistically the best team in the NBA.
I'm holding out hope that Miami will at least have that one game where Duncan and Tyler are making it rain from three, and Boston simultaneously has the game where no one's hitting threes, but Sam Hauser entered the game and just started lighting them up from deep. And like, yeah, there's only so much you can do. This, I was talking to my wife about it. I'm like, yeah, it's the one seed versus the eight seed. It's the best team in the Eastern Conference versus the worst team to make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference without their best player. Like, cool. Good seeing you guys here. Have a nice vacation.
Jason Tatum was only +3. Just something to throw out there. The Celtics on-off numbers continue to baffle me. Like, they win games by 20. Their best player wasn't that impactful somehow.
He's out there with the bench a lot.
Well, of course he's impactful, but the overall...
The measurables don't show it.
The measure, it's like, oh, weird. Yeah. I mean, the numbers were fine. He had 23 points, 10 boards, 10 assists on 7 of 18 shooting. It's a triple-double. It's a playoff triple-double. It was 14-0 to start, right?
Yeah.
It was 14-2. So 12-0 to start. And the Heat came back up. It was like a 5-point game after one after the first quarter. But there is such a massive talent gap. I mean, this is like, you'd have to dig for a talent gap this sizable. I mean, is it like the Bucks and Heat in 2013, the Bucks and Six series, the last time the 1-8 were like just galaxies apart?
Yeah, it's not close. Dylan, any takes or thoughts on Heat Celtics?
No, I mean, it is a rough matchup. Like you said, what can Miami do to make this a more competitive series? Like, maybe if they could combine their roster with, like, the team that they beat in the play-in, and, like, that's what you get for winning the play-in, is that you can take the best players off that team. Then maybe they bring their roster up closer to what Boston has as one of the deepest teams in the league in terms of high-level talent. But, yeah, it's tough because the ways that underdog teams can come out on top is either by, you know, junking up the game, playing really good defense, which Miami can do, but Boston is, you know, a otherworldly offensive team with so many different threats up and down the roster. And the other thing you can do is just make a lot of threes, and Miami has like one or two good three-point shooters, and Boston takes the most threes in the NBA. So it's not only an insurmountable talent gap, but also the ways that you can overcome that are particularly bad matchups for the Celtics.
I'm trying to like process this in my head. Would the Miami beat the Celtics, the Bulls and Heat combined? Like, would you take it? Is that still Celtics in like five?
Let's play this out. All right. So the Miami Heat beat starting point guard Coby White versus Drew Holiday. Who are you taking?
Is it going to be Celtics in all five positions? All right, well, we won't ruin it. We're taking White on the Celtics.
Yeah. All right, so Coby White versus Derek White, you take. Okay, shooting guard. I'm thinking we're going Tyler Hero here versus Drew Holiday. You taking Holiday?
Yeah, I am.
Small forward, we're going to say Jaylen Brown versus, I'm just going to put Jaime Jaquez in here. I know he's more of a shooting guard, but. You have Hawkins, you could have Caleb Martin. I think that's got to be Brown as well.
Yeah.
Power forward, Jason Tatum versus DeMar DeRozan. Still taking Tatum. And then Bam versus Kristaps Porzingis.
There's the closest matchup.
So we're saying even if the Bulls and Heat combined forces, the Celtics still have the five best players.
The Celtics still sweep them, yeah.
Okay. The Miami beat or the I don't think I have the mental capacity. I don't have the phonological awareness to do this game. I'm trying to the Sixer. Can I combine the Sixers with Philadelphia? I can't even do it.
I think the Philadelphia.
The Philadelphia Sheet.
Seats. Yeah. The Philadelphia Sheet probably get the win, but that's,
I don't know.
That's
not
a good list. That's close. I think that's a real series.
All right, let's talk about the Philadelphia 76ers and their narrow loss against the Knicks, which I think has been the best game of the weekend so far. We're recording this 6:40 Eastern Standard. Bucks have not tipped off against Pacers yet, just for some timeline, because I don't know when I'll have this edited and up. But guys, how'd you feel about that game?
The three things I anticipated actually happened. Joel Embiid got hurt. The Knicks had better depth, and what was the third thing? I had a third piece to this. Joel Embiid got hurt. Knew that was coming. The Knicks had better depth. I knew that was coming. I guess it's a two-parter.
Was it Tobias Harris pulling out of Harrison
Barnes'
performance?
Yeah. Tobias Harris is terrible. I said this pre-pod, and I told Nate if I say my pod takes, I will forget them. I totally forgot it. Tobias Harris is unplayable. Tobias Harris, like, is the Tobias Harris and Nick Batum conversation real? That's a legitimate conversation you have to have. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, right?
Listen, in the play-in, they had a moment where it was like Lowry, Maxey, Buddy, and Oubre, or Batum and Oubre. And like, those guys plus Embiid, those six total players, could be getting 95% of the minutes. And like, actually, Paul Reed has looked really good. They don't do well when he's out there because Embiid's like loss on the defensive end. But Reed has been really impactful getting offensive rebounds, both in this game and the play-in game.
35 points worse when Embiid was off the floor.
Yeah.
In 12 minutes.
Embiid tried to do a successfully completed a self-alley-oop and injured himself doing that. You gotta not try that. Like, I think if you're Embiid, you do a lot of athletic stuff. It's a miracle you're out there. You're already kind of hobbling around. You don't look 100%. To attempt such an athletic feat is not that great of an idea. And the fact that he got injured, left the game, came back in, was like kind of a surprise, and still played 37 minutes was unreal. I don't think Embiid plays every game in this series. I really liked the Sixers' chances as a contender. And like my pre-playoff power rankings, I was like, the Sixers are like, should be a top five team. Like they have the top player, the talent around him. But part of that was like, could they get the momentum going? And mm-hmm. I just think the Knicks are like fucking kneecap biters, man. Like they just, they get you below the legs. Like they beat you with hammers the whole game. It's way too physical. Brunson did not have a great game, but you got like clutch Anunoby threes, clutch Hart threes. Mitchell Robinson did a pretty good job. Like the Knicks are so physical. They have such a large cast of characters. It's really great. Like Deuce McBride game.
Yeah. Really big minutes off the bench too for New York. Just looking at the box score, you got a plus 27 for Bogdanovich, a plus 20 for Robinson, a plus 37 for Deuce. If you're looking at the Sixers starters, Oubre plus 6, Embiid plus 14. Lowry plus 6. So like seems like the Knicks really won this at least in the early stretch. You mentioned the clutch minutes from New York, but out depthing the Sixers, having more guys that they can go to play reliable minutes.
I think this was the best I've seen Bojan play in a Knicks uniform.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
I was a little bit worried about him coming over from the Pistons. Having watched a lot of him at the Pistons, I was like, there's probably a little bit of fool's gold in his Detroit numbers, because no one cares when he does something bad. No one cares when he gives up stuff on defense. But the Knicks have struggled to score without Randle when Brunson sits. And he came in and played really well. And I think Deuce, he finished the night with 5 threes. I think 3 of them were in the third quarter, if not 4 of them. It was very big third for him. And Isaiah Hartenstein, I didn't realize he only played 18 minutes. But the guy was super impactful. Him and Mitchell Robinson, like, you know, neither one of them is amazing. Neither one of them is like a world beater. But to be able to alternate the two of them and always have one of them somewhat fresh to go up against Embiid, it's going to wear him down. And he's already coming off a major injury, already getting hurt, you know, going down pretty hard, just staring into nowhere after that injury. Like half of me thought he thought his season was done. You watch that and that's the look he gave. Like, cool, another year where I am done with this injury. I think there's a lot of things the Knicks need to do to figure out how to get Brunson more open. There's not like a lot of good mismatches for him to hunt. Like he was hunting Oubre a bit, trying to get him on switches. And Oubre's length was still very problematic for him to try to score against. So I think he'll play better, but I don't think that this is going to be a insane Brunson series where he's, you know, 35 a night.
Embiid is such a fantastic rim protector too. Just one of the best in the league. And that's a factor when he's out there. The Sixers do play legitimate defense. I did want to touch on the bench point one more time, because yeah, Bojan was like the primary creator on offense for a good stretch there. I think like towards the end of the second quarter.
Yeah.
But the Knicks ran an 8-man rotation. I say they have all this depth, but it's only 8 men, but they're all like 20. What's it like? Hardenstein was the team low with 18 minutes, and off the bench was like 25 minutes, 30 minutes, 28 minutes. Where for the Sixers, like Batum made 26 minutes. After that, it's like Paul Reed briefly, Campaign got 3 minutes, Buddy Hield played 11 minutes. I mean, only 11 minutes for Buddy Hield. So it felt like after when you went to the bench for Philadelphia, there really was nothing there. There's absolutely nothing for them to scrounge up to try to match what the Knicks are doing. And they're also starting Tobias Harris, which really hurts their chances.
I just wanted to defend Tobias for a minute. I don't know that I can, but he'll do like 2 or 3 plays in a row where I'm like, this is why Tobias is paid money. This is where you need Tobias. And then he's just silent the rest of the game. But every game he has like 3 possessions in a row where you're like, ah, that could be what Tobias could be. And then he just disappears.
Did you see those missed threes? He had some gnarly misses. Like, if there was a second rim on either side of the first, like the first rim's here, and there's 2 more rims, and you can hit even off any 3 rims you'd like, you pick a rim, he would have missed all 3 of those. Like, it just wasn't, it was not a close shot. I'm just glad one other team has a fucking useless small forward they have to lug around so they can understand what it's like. Ridiculous.
Like having Harrison Barnes.
Yeah, no, our season, I'm wearing my Kings shirt. 100 years of royalty, and I suffered through Harrison Barnes minutes. A dude played 82 games. He started all of them. He played 2,300 minutes. He had less VORP than Nemus Keita. I'm fucking serious. And Chimezie Metsu, both of our garbage backup centers from last year, barely playing, were more impactful players than Harrison Barnes given the entire season. Fucking ridiculous.
Bet you wish you had Jackson Hayes now.
Can he play small forward? He might. I might. It's all right. I'm locked into the draft. I'm gonna be draft heavy. Got the 13th pick, man. It's like the best draft class ever to have the 13th pick.
I think whatever draft class Giannis and Steve Nash were, was Giannis 15 or 13?
It was Kobe. 15. Sorry to derail this with Harrison.
What was
Barnes.
Kobe?
We're not in the playoffs. This is a playoff pod. We can't talk about the Kings. We're not in the playoffs.
Kobe was 13. All right, getting Nash mixed. Yeah,
see
that the 96. That's a good draft to have Kobe. All right. Keys for the 76ers. Here's to try to get back in this. Keep Embiid healthy.
Joel Embiid grow third, have backup knee, third knee. Just can swap in and out.
Yeah. I think it's time for the Sixers to look into, you know, experimental, maybe even occult medical technology to try to develop knee cartilage.
All right. Occult technology.
But seriously, that's it. Other than that, like, Joel Embiid is good enough. He can beat the Knicks on his own. Like, he is twice as good, healthy, than anyone on the Knicks right now. Even with Jalen Brunson. Like, he is so much better. Like, when he was healthy, you couldn't even fucking look at that guy. You could not guard him. No one on earth could guard him for any stretch of the time. He's like 7'2", 300, and he shot the ball at Kevin Durant. It was insane to watch. If that is there, there's no other pieces you need. Like, you're going to win most series. You're the best player in almost every series, other than the finals.
And the Knicks really did struggle trying to defend him and Maxey early in the game. Like, OG was trying to chase Maxey over all of these screens. I wouldn't be surprised if they play more Deuce McBride, because I felt like he did a better one-on-one job guarding Maxey. It's tough for OG to get around all those screens. Kind of think he's a little bit better as a roamer, because they just don't have a great individual matchup. Like, he could shut down Tobias Harris. I don't think we need that. That's
instead of 7 points, you'll only have two.
Yeah, yeah. But you mentioned Kevin Durant. I think this was the shocker of my Saturday. The Timberwolves just demolishing the Phoenix Suns. And before we get into it, I just want to say, Timberwolves fans, quit it with your inferiority complex. Act like you've been here before. I don't need you all telling me how great...
What, the first round?
I don't need you all telling me how great Rudy Gobert has been all season. Because Rudy Gobert has not been that great at stepping out and defending guys in the mid-range, consistently contesting guys from threes, individually defending guys like Kevin Durant on the arc. We've gone back. We've watched the film. That was an amazing Rudy Gobert game. And that's coming from someone who voted Gobert as his DPOY. Like, Gobert is a very good player. Quit it with the
Nate's
inferior
getting
complex.
Bullied in the TikTok comments.
Really, it's like that's three guys.
This rant, he's getting fucking harassed by Timberwolves. It sucks because we've defended Gobert so much. Dylan, who did you pick to win this series?
I picked the Suns.
How many games?
Like 5 or 6, maybe?
Yeah, same reason. I had Suns in 7.
Yeah, they dominated the regular season matchup, even though there was some, you get hot in one game and then it's hard to draw a lot of conclusions from that. But it seemed like just a terrible...
Basketball, man. Sorry.
It seems like just a terrible matchup. Like, it's the team that does the best job at stopping shots at the rim against the team who shoots the best from mid-range. You know, styles make fights, and this just seemed like a terrible matchup. But they seem to find some answers, and, you know, probably offensively also just a big game from Edwards.
I don't think that mid-range shooting is going to stay consistent, and that's not a crazy take. He's not going to dominate like prime Kevin Durant. He's not going to dominate Kevin Durant like he's prime Kevin Durant every game. They got a fantastic offensive Durant game. I think the biggest story is they got murdered on the offensive or on the glass and the offensive glass. 20 rebounds to 52. It felt like every single missed shot Gobert or Towns or some Timberwolves 7-footer was near. Even Edwards had a bunch of rebounds. Yeah. And I liked the Suns matchup because they have size. Like, they play guards, a lot of guards, but they're big guards. And then Nurkic and Kevin Durant offer a lot of front court size and height. Didn't seem to matter. I mean, it's like the Wolves put a bunch of nickels in socks and just beat the shit out of Booker all game. It was a mean mugging the entire game.
Well, having gone back and just rewatched all of their games where they play each other across the regular season, the Suns did a really good job targeting Mike Conley during the regular season. The Wolves played a lot more for Nikhil Alexander-Walker this game, it felt like, and that takes away the easiest advantage. I would have liked to have seen them try to target the Conley when he was on more. He did still play a fair amount. He did not have a particularly great game. And the Wolves did start off early, really struggling with the turnovers. That's how Phoenix was getting out, scoring with relative ease. I don't know what to do about the rebounding disparity, because Phoenix Dylan, I think you said it about Dallas. They looked like they were playing in the regular season mode where they just were not boxing out. There was, I noted it in the fourth quarter, there was a Rudy Gobert or pick and roll where he rolls to the rim and I forgot who shot it. No one even tagged Gobert. Like, if you would hit Gobert, it's an easy dunk. If you don't hit Gobert, he was standing wide open with no one on his side of the basket to snag up the offensive rebound. And like, it wasn't just one play, but there was one that I specifically remember. You have to put a body on guys. You have to try to box out. I don't have box out numbers, but I cannot imagine the whole Phoenix Suns in the entire game boxed out more than like 12 times.
Yeah, I mean, three offensive rebounds to 13, that's a 10-position advantage to Minnesota, and what was it? I guess it was a pretty big lead, a pretty big one. But yeah, that's one easy thing in theory. It's a schematic thing that you can point at and say, get bodies to the boards, get bodies on people.
Mm-hmm. I also want to say, I don't know what the fuck Royce O'Neal is doing out there. I know he eventually started hitting some threes, but like, Royce was out there guarding Nikhil Alexander-Walker. If you have to play Royce out there, why is he not trying to guard Anthony Edwards? Why is he not trying to guard Karl-Anthony Towns? Why is he guarding the like Timberwolves' least impactful offensive player on the court at any given time? Like, he's supposed to be your defensive guy. He's why you brought him in. Have him defend someone. Have him try.
You'd like to see that, right? What's interesting is I had predicted the Suns to win this series. In the grand scheme, though, I definitely considered the Wolves to be a better contender just because their long-term outlook looked better. Mm. Where it's like, I cannot imagine this Suns team with the depth they're supporting making, like, winning a Western Conference Finals. Like, Beal's gonna miss a couple games. Like, if the Suns manage to win this series or win a couple series, Beal plays 90% of that, right? There's gonna be a stretch where he's not there. And so I didn't like that outlook for them, but I thought the matchup wasn't great. On offense, I imagine it to be like Edwards versus Beal, Booker, and Durant, which is where you're going to lose. Just the tough shot making that Phoenix had. But man, the Wolves defense was just unreal. And the first game, you know, it's just like it was in the Clippers series, the home team wins game one. And it's like, this is shock. Like, this is what you should have anticipated. But it's like the way that win happened is really concerning.
I should note, Grayson Allen did get hurt. I remember her start of the third quarter, they're talking about him not being in there because he sprained his ankle. I did just pull it up to double check. He's questionable for game two. Phoenix does not have much depth. Losing Grayson Allen and basically only having six playable guys is very challenging because Grayson's three-point shooting is very impactful for them.
I thought it was an incredible Gobert game. Well, I just want to touch on that for a second. Like, he hit a turnaround and one fadeaway jumper. I don't know if you guys caught that possession. I think it was in the second quarter. I'm like, this game is over. This game is done. He just like, and this should be a rule. Like, if Rudy Gobert hits a turnaround fadeaway jumper, it's just like, the game is over. Congratulations. Like, you win. Everyone go home.
Pull the starters.
That was it. I felt like Gobert, I mean, he dominated the glass. He defended the rim. And then in space, there was a possession in like the left corner, I guess, from certain perspectives. And it was him and Booker. And Booker is just like dancing on him. And he was really pestering him. And Booker ends up making like a coming baseline and making like a reverse layup. But you got to work for that. Like, if that was the best perimeter defender on the Wolves, that's an accurate possession. But instead, it's their center who like notoriously gets targeted in playoff games. But if he was targeted for a second, it was a mistake by Phoenix.
Yeah. Same thing with Durant. He had a really nice position defending Durant late in the game, where they just went straight ISO, and you know, again, Durant hit the shot, but contested tough fall away mid range jump shots. That's sort of the one shot that you're willing to give up, especially if it's, you know, a big mismatch, your best offensive player against their worst perimeter defender.
I notate what the score is when these plays happen. Aaron, your score of the Gobert turnaround 12-footer and one against Nurk, 68-75 after the bucket's made, before the free throw is made. Like,
game over.
Game's starting to get close. You don't expect Gobert to be the guy to hit that clutch shot. And then 91-111 is the Gobert defending Durant, top of the key, isolation, pokes the ball free. Ant comes up, steals it, coast-to-coast dunk for Ant. Like, Gobert absolutely had an amazing in defense. And like, that's why I'm very mad about Timberwolves fans getting in my mentions right now. I'm not trying to like play down Gobert. He's a four-time defensive player of the year and he's still ratcheted up his defense. This is a very, very good defensive player who elevated his performance even greater. Like, stop having the inferiority complex, Wolves fans. You've been here before.
We can't make enemies on this podcast, Nate. We can't make enemies like this. I like how Nate's avoiding the Lakers game. Come on.
Come on, I was going to say.
Let's get to it.
I'm going to talk about it.
Come on. Isn't there one other game you want to talk? No, all right. We'll save Cavs Magic because I feel really good about that game. And may or may not be a game seven. Or not game seven. Game four. We'll see. All right.
Five?
So.
What are we talking about?
Nothing.
Okay.
Let's talk about
that part for the pod. Yeah.
I might miss the pod next week because I'm going to be in Orlando. So.
Are you going to watch the Cavs game?
If the Magic are down 3-0 and tickets get really cheap, I will go to that game. Right now, like, nosebleeds are 150 and I'm not going
to
spend that.
That's how you can tell that Nate is a basketball sicko. He wants to go to game four of Cavs Magic when they're down 3-0.
Yeah, because tickets will be cheap. All right, so Lakers Nuggets. The Nuggets just toyed with the Lakers. Like, the Lakers had the lead early. Nuggets brought back close around half. Third quarter, there's one play where it's a little Murray-Jokic pick and roll, and then Gordon cuts baseline, and Nurkic just so lazily tosses him the ball for that highlight dunk. It just was toying with LA. It was so simple and so easy. And then KCP knocks down four threes, which, you know, just insane shooting from him. Really weird. KCP knocks down four threes in a quarter. Miles McBride knocks down four threes in a quarter. And Nikhil Alexander Walker knocked down four threes in a quarter. Kind of a just weird coinky dink that I think it was the third quarter for all three guys, just lighting it up. I don't know. Denver has the Lakers numbers. I picked Nuggets in five before the season or before the series. I don't see much way around that.
Hey, Nate, if your floor was dusty, if your like tile floor is dusty, what would you use to clean it?
You know, I'm probably a mop guy, you know, especially if it's tile.
Don, any insight?
Get out the broom, baby.
Get out the broom. What action do you do with the broom? It's over. This is going to be a sweep. The List Lakers team is not close to Denver right now. My goodness. They're just not that close. The thing is, if I told you that LeBron Anthony Davis had extremely efficient offensive performances and the Nuggets shot six free throws, not only would you probably predict the Lakers to win that game, it would at least be close, right? But it wasn't close. Was it close in the slightest? At this point, it's just like a math equation that they're on the wrong end of. I don't see the Lakers outputting enough high-quality three-pointers to keep up with what Denver's doing. Denver doesn't take a lot of threes. I think they're last in three-point attempts the regular season. But what they do is generate really high-quality three-point attempts, and that's a really big advantage come playoff time. And that's what the tail of the tape really is, that the high quality looks that Denver just gets. And there is a play in the second half where LeBron and Davis miss a couple layups, and then Davis like collapses from exhaustion under the basket, and then Jokic runs down and gets a dunk over LeBron's behind him. I'll say over LeBron. Denver's gonna basically exhaust LeBron and Davis, and it's the same story from last year where if the Lakers want to remain competitive, Anthony Davis and LeBron have to be on the floor the entire game and play perfectly. And they did that, I felt, and they still lost by like 12.
Yeah, D'Lo going 1-for-9 from beyond the arc. It is foreseeable, is predictable. I saw someone drop an article about like how D'Lo got ready for the playoffs. And they dropped it before the game. I saw it after the game. And I was just like, ooh, that's a tweet I'm deleting. Like, you know, but yeah.
My first half takeaway was actually fairly positive for the Lakers. I thought from a, you know, eye test perspective, their defense really seemed to be, you know, sort of on a string, really moving well together, covering for each other, rotating well. Obviously, it got away from them a little bit in the second half with the big Denver third quarter. I do feel like there is a little bit of hope you could gain as a Lakers fan to maybe, you know, get this to a 5-game series. The defense looked as good as you could hope for. And if, you know, D'Lo and Reeves can put together a decent game, all of a sudden it's not too big of a gap to overcome.
Yeah, I mean, if D'Lo hits three of his threes, the Lakers still lose. Like, goes 1-for-9. If that's a 4-for-9 game, the Lakers still have lost this one. Anthony Davis going 0-for-4, I don't really care about it. Like, maybe he hits 1-for-4. The way Denver just flipped that switch in the third quarter, it felt so predictable. It felt so easy for them to do that. And like we discussed the benches for the Knicks. The Knicks played three quality bench guys. The Lakers don't have the Lakers have a half of one. If you like Torian Prince can play a good game, that's huge for the Lakers. Not like Denver's bench did a ton, but Peyton Watson shows up and instantly knocks down three, like his first possession in the game. That alone. DeAndre Jordan got a really nice block and played surprisingly good defense. I hate the fact when I see DeAndre out there and he's like playing respectable basketball, because I just feel like he should be done. He should be toast, but he plays semi-respectable ball.
Yeah. It really feels like cheating when DeAndre Jordan starts playing well. You're like, okay, DeAndre Jordan's in. This is our chance to go on a bit of a run. This guy can't play basketball. And then when you don't win those minutes, it's like, it's over for us.
Especially because who he's replacing. Like, he's replacing the best player on the planet. Yeah. And he's not good. It's like, dude, you have to take advantage of that. I feel like the Lakers gassed themselves in game one. They went all in on this sucker punch. Yeah. I mean, do you guys know how many minutes Anthony Davis played?
45.
Anthony Davis cannot play 45 minutes in back-to-back games. You're trying to kill this fucking guy, man. Like, this series gets to a point where it's competitive in the Lakers' favor. Davis cannot play those minutes. And LeBron, who's 6,000 years old, played 41 minutes. And, like, none of the Nuggets starters got to 40 minutes. And it just felt like the Lakers did everything. And even if you get those Reeves games, even if you get the D'Lo game, are you going to get this LeBron game again? Like, are you going to get this Davis game again? And those are the games that you want. And you can say, well, you know, D'Lo was 1 of 9. If you told me D'Angelo Russell took 20 shots before this game and I had to guess the outcome, it's a Lakers loss every time.
Yeah, last week, Dylan and I talked about, you know, if you're the Lakers, do you intentionally throw the game against the Pelicans to try to get a better matchup against the Thunder, which I don't even know that that's a winnable matchup.
Throwing games.
You're not beating Denver.
What are we, shoeless Joe Jackson? Jesus Christ. Throwing games. Like,
so my response to this was that, no, if I'm LeBron, I want to play Denver right away. Because if we lose, great. Now I can enjoy my offseason. I got more time to rest up for next year. And if we win, we know we're contenders. Like, anything short of that doesn't matter.
I'm never going to entertain a LeBron goat case ever again in my life. It came out that he threw a fucking play-in game to get a better matchup. God, just the idea just kills me. That's insanity. That is unbridled insanity. Now, the all-time conversation is really interesting, because I think looking back on this era, Jokic like murdering, just like thrashing LeBron James in back-to-back series, like, is a really impactful moment in like NBA history, to see like the end of LeBron's career, you run into now the best player in the world. I don't think we even realize how much this is going to be talked about like 20 years from now. And it's like, is Jokic a top five player? It's like, he beat LeBron twice. And it's like, he was old. Like, oh, who cares? He's old. LeBron James. I'm both sides of the argument right now.
So like, as someone that charts and like tracks all-time ranking stuff, this is what happens. Guys at the end of their career start to like dip. Like, you have Elliot Kopp's book, don't you? The Who's Better, Who's Best, that declares Shaq is the greatest player of all time in 2004. And then we get to see the end of Shaq's career, where he's, you know, on the Cavaliers, on the Celtics, and that like people start to drop him because you start seeing him fail. And same sort of thing. Kobe, if you look at Kobe after those two rings, 2009-10, that's probably the peak of when Kobe's ranking was. And then as you see the tail end, he starts to fall back. Like 9 and 10, you see a lot of people ranking him in the top five. And now it's like somewhere 8 to 12. And I think LeBron's GOAT case is going to be hampered a bit because we saw this tail end fall where we don't see Jordan get beat. I think the mystique of Jordan retiring.
Yeah, going missing out the playoffs of the Wizards. Sorry.
It's huge. It's so big and it's so dumb. But like, we saw guys lose, and so we downplay them, or we, you know, hold it against them, whereas guys that we didn't see do it. You know, if I had to coach someone for how to have the perfect GOAT case, it's get to your apex, win as many rings as possible, and then retire immediately after you can no longer win rings. Just walk away.
It's a Russell then. That's a Bill Russell then. I mean, there is no like 1970 Celtics where they lose in the first round to like the fucking Supersonics or something. It's like, oh, like, I guess you have this like almost impenetrable argument where he gets hurt in one finals and the other one is against Wilt and like the super team Sixers. And so it's like, oh, no, he actually, it's like pretty much perfect. But when you get to this point when you get to project, like in Kobe's like 2009, 2010, he's like, hey, he's like all this and he's going to be even more. And then when the more comes and it's not that great, then yeah, he starts to slip a little bit. I mean, at this point, LeBron is in such uncharted territory where none of this is hurting his all-time case. None of this is affecting him in that way because it's like there's no competition. If this was year 15, you could say something, but it's like him or Robert Parrish on the 96 Bulls, basically, for age 41. None of it hurts, but it doesn't help as much as maybe it could. Yeah, that's my all-time spiel.
Well, what do the Lakers need to do to get back in this? What are three takeaways we could give LA? What's
the Chris Webber? Ever seen the Chris Webber, like the Heat's keys to the game? It was like, LeBron, wake up. LeBron, get on bus. LeBron, show up to game. That's all they can hope for is, you know LeBron's going to be there. And I know that LeBron will play well in basically all these games. But he looked really tired in the second half. He did a lot of corner standing. Dylan, did you notice the corner standing? The LeBron fatigue?
Yeah, I mean, over 40 minutes. It seemed like a clear game plan from the Lakers to, like you said, come out for a haymaker, try to steal this one, and let that set them up to make it a competitive series. And when you've got LeBron and AD, and even, you know, D'Angelo Russell playing over 40 minutes a game, and you miss the punch, it's hard, you know, really hard to see how they could do anything from here.
It's like failing to onside kick it in this thing, attempting an onside kick and failing in the Super Bowl. Like, you tried to just do the crazy shit. And you're like, well, now the other team has the ball on R30. And we're like, when this game is over.
Yeah, I don't see a ton of hope. I mean, I hate to say it, but give me some more Max Christie. Give me some Max Christie. Surprisingly, the Lakers have been really good with him in all year long. Part of that's a bit of when they play him. But also part of that is that he is a 6'6" shooting guard who competes defensively, can space the floor, is just a catch and shoot guy that doesn't try to do too much, doesn't over dribble. So maybe that's a wrinkle, but that's kind of all I got.
Christian Wood's healthy. They said he's going to play in game two. They said he's coming back.
That sounds awful.
Anything?
But I actually did like Jackson. I actually did like Jackson Hayes's minutes in this. All four of them. Yeah.
Wow. I'm surprised you fucking noticed he was out there.
I think they were looking good when he was in there. Maybe they go back to that a little bit.
They played him and Davis together, and I just never feel like that's a good idea.
Hey, you got to have someone guard Jokic, and then you still got to have rim protection. That's the way to do it.
That's fair.
I mean, Rui, unfortunately, is no longer the Jokic stopper.
Well, speaking of guarding a team's best player and still having rim protection, the Cleveland motherfucking Cavaliers.
Mm. What was your guys' prediction on this series? I wasn't able to join last week.
Cavs in 5.
Wow. Dylan?
I think I had like Cavs in 6 or 7. I had it as a close series, and I said if Donovan Mitchell needs to be the best player in the series, and that's the way that they can, you know, not make this a competitive series.
I've been terrified of my pick this whole time because it didn't feel realistic. But what I was thinking is the Cavs need to win this, and they need to win this like in pretty convincing fashion. You know, you have a young team that's never been in the playoffs before, very little playoff experience. You got your ass handed to you last year by the Knicks. If you don't come out and hand Orlando their ass, like, what did you learn? How did you grow? How did you show me anything? And I loved everything they showed me. I thought Max Strus was super impactful from a hustle energy standpoint, bringing Heat culture to the Midwest. And then Evan Mobley took every advantage he could find. For some reason, they kept getting Cole Anthony on him. And he was like, cool, mouse in the house. Let me get this and post up. And I feel like he's been a bit timid about posting up even when he had mismatches. So it was really great to see.
Yeah. I think Orlando pretty much busted out straight away. Like, they didn't mess around. They went to, you know, they pulled out everything they could. They went with Gary Harris and Jonathan Isaac in the starting lineup. You know, they played all their cards right away. And ultimately, like we said in the preview, this is probably a team that's just going to struggle to get buckets unless Paolo ascends to another level. And he had a pretty, you know, reasonable game from a box score perspective, made shots on decent efficiency. But a lot of times the series comes down to best player in the series. And Donovan Mitchell is far and away, I think, the best player on either team. When he decides to play well.
Far and away, but by a massive margin as of now. I think I really liked Mobley's minutes. I feel like he was more aggressive offensively. And him and Allen just dominated the glass. It was like 54 rebounds to just 40. I said for Miami, that team's going to get to 90 points. Anything after that's a gift. I think the line for Orlando is like 70. Like, they're going to get to 70. Anything after that, like, oh, like, they got really hot. Like, they had a really nice stretch in there. And the Cavs missed 18 threes in a row. Like, they started 5 of 5, which is a nice start. But there was a stretch where, like, any team, that was like the Orlando's chance. But even then, with the Cavs just not able to find a three, Orlando was like just kind of keeping pace with them offensively. Then down the stretch, it's like Donovan Mitchell is just hitting these tough buckets, like making these like superstar plays that I didn't think Bankero could really go toe for toe with. Yeah, I didn't like Orlando in my power rankings for the season. I had Orlando like really close to the bottom because their offense is terrible. But I just feel like they were so disruptive defensively that they could beat Cleveland. Like, Cleveland was like the only team in the entire field that I actually liked their chances against enough to go Magic in 7. Like, it was so close. I wish I could take that back. Like, I think what we saw in this game is going to be what we see for the rest of the series. There was really no offensive explosion that's going to be coming for Orlando.
If I told you Gary Harris, Markelle Fultz, Cole Anthony, and Joe Ingles put up a combined 19 field goals, how many would you anticipate them to make?
Apparently zero. apparently none of them, but I would anticipate more than that.
Yeah, I mean, that four guy group going 0 for 19, Jalen Suggs going 4 for 16, like that's not gonna happen again. It is not like Cleveland's defense on those particular guard and wing players in particular was that locked down. You know, Garland competes and Mitchell tries harder in the playoffs, but that group shooting that poorly will probably not happen again. But it made my Cavs in 5 take feel really good.
But even if they shoot like fine, but that gets you to 96 points, then 98 points or something, it's like there's a lot of ground to make up.
That's a lot of misses. Between those four plus Suggs, that is 37 shots and just 4 makes. If they shoot 50%, you know, that's probably a Magic win. Like, that's a lot of misses for 5 guys to put up.
If only the worst shooting team in the league didn't shoot so fucking bad. I don't know. Yeah, I agree. If Orlando wasn't the worst 3-point shooting team in the playoffs, things would be different. But here we are, and they are. And they've struggled from 3 all year. And Franz has really struggled offensively. That was another big moment for me, where I feel like Franz last season had like legitimate moments where, I guess it was like in Kings games where fucking Barnes was guarding him. But like, man, like no one can stay in front of Franz Wagner. Like, I really like this guy. I didn't see like the elite offensive creation upside from him. It was a rough game one.
Dylan, you got anything more?
No, I think we're just a little bit early. This is a little bit early for the Magic. The only way that they come out with this is if Paolo's the best player in the offensively. And he's, you know, putting up 30s, 40s, because they really struggle for offensive creation outside of him. And it's just a little bit too early for him. A bit too much to ask from a guy in his second season.
I think the big change that I would try to make for them is I would consider not starting Isaac, maybe starting Mo Wagner instead. Just they did not have the offensive juice. What is Isaac really defending? I mean, he's providing you rim protection and against Mitchell trying to drive. But Mitchell does a lot of his work outside, a lot from mid-range. He's a 3-level scorer. So I don't know that Isaac's lack of offense is enough to sacrifice the defense. And Isaac played very well offensively, you know, a lot of catch and shoot threes. But I think you might need another guy to create. You just got to try something to generate more offense. And you know, I'm not too worried about defending Mobley or Allen, like in an individual one-on-one sense. Those guys are pretty rim rolly, although Mobley had good posts, but just that would be the one tweak I'd really try is can we get some more offense out there?
Yeah, that's what they need. I mean, Bankero had 9 turnovers. Just want to throw it out there. 9 turnovers. That's as many as Mitchell and Garland combined. Go ahead, Don.
Yeah. I mean, going to Wagner over Isaac is sort of, you know, adding an extra 10 points on offense and giving up an extra 10 points on defense. Isaac's greatest ability is his defensive versatility, that he can protect the rim, but also that he's a very good perimeter defender. Going up against a team who plays a lot of pick and roll with their guards, having switchability at the 5, I think, is what they were trying to achieve. And Wagner, you know, the only thing he can do defensively is like draw charge, and so it's a lot of blow bys if you go that way. It's tough. There aren't a lot of good answers.
I do think he was top three in charges drawn. So like that's not the worst take.
Yeah, he was also top three in opponent field goal allowed at the rim. There's drawbacks in all this.
Yeah.
I think the lesson you learn is if this is the argument you're having, like Mo Wagner versus Jonathan Isaac, it's not your series, Dean. Like, it's not, probably not time. You know what they need is Malik Monk in free agency, which is almost all but confirmed today with a De'Aaron Fox interview that Malik Monk is going to leave us, going to leave the beautiful city of Sacramento. And that's almost the perfect destination for him. Like a team that's so desperate for on ball creation from a guard, and has the cap space to do it. So I will miss Malik Monk, but I hope he enjoys Orlando.
You sure they're not going to go sign Klay Thompson?
I'm not sure. I really think Klay's staying in Golden State. I really do. I think his play has declined to the point where the number that the Warriors were offering is now the number he would get elsewhere. And I think Malik Monk is just much, much better than he is. He's a much better player, and for what Orlando really needs.
That about does it on the playoff games. I think this is the first time I've seen you guys since Super USA was announced. The Levengers, as I've also seen them be called.
I like it.
That may have played in a little bit to my Clippers optimism that Kawhi would be playing if he's accepting the Team USA spot. But gentlemen,
he's resting for the Olympics.
Yeah. Just got load manage for Olympics. How are we feeling about the Levengers?
I can't believe Kawhi's playing that. And Embiid, right? Embiid's playing them. Is he playing for us?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's weird. I'll admit, that's a little strange. He's like, he has three nationalities. I think the third one is American, but I'll take them. The star power we can get.
I will say Embiid had a really nice quote of like he was debating of which to go for. And he said his son was born in America. He's lived in America. He will probably live in America the rest of his life. And so like it's in part for his son, in part for like his future. And he just thinks that, you know, looking back and like
good guy,
you
know, Joel Embiid.
Listen, I would have loved to see him play for Cameroon, try to get Cameroon there. I feel like it's between France and the USA.
It's
like
France, yeah.
Like what is that? What is
Wemby,
France,
dude? Wemby and Embiid is gonna be the greatest front court of all time.
And Gobert.
You could legitimately play all three of those guys at the same time. Like that's not a thing. You can do that. Especially international play. Just a little bit more condensed, a little more chess matchy, you know, a little more physical. Imagine the free throw tip outs. It hits the rim and like it's just like, you know, the international, like the above the cylinder, just smack it out of there.
The three of them, Batum and then Evan Fournier. FIBA Fournier.
Evan Fournier.
So USA bringing home the gold?
I would bet so. What are they, minus 1,000 odds? Yeah, this is a fucking conversation we're having. Yes. It's like the greatest basketball team ever assembled. It's the best team since the dream team. I can't believe we're talking about this. Yes.
What I'm going to be most interested to see is, because with a team this stacked, is who are the guys that are going to be starting and closing? Do they go to the best players or do they go to the biggest names? Because if we're doing closing five, LeBron's not one of the five best players on that team. And are they going to bench LeBron? I doubt it. Like, is Jason Tatum and Kawhi riding the bench? Like, it's gonna be fascinating to see how the rotations play out.
I think you almost do what the Redeem team did with Jason Kidd and what the Dream team did with Bird and Magic, where you start those guys, but then hopefully you're blowing out teams by so much that it really doesn't matter. Like, you know, you can transition away and hopefully there's just not enough of a competitive balance that you really have to address that conversation. But 12 guys, all Hall of Fame locks, you know, who's not getting minutes? What is the pecking order? I think that's where this is going to get really interesting.
I have no idea. I think they all play. I think they all just, I think they, in AAU, like the fucking tryhards, it's with like tryhard coaches. This is what they do. They have 15 kids, little fucking gremlins. And they start their five, and every 5 minutes, like 3 minutes even, they swap the next five out and they full court press the entire game. So they have like fresh legs the whole time.
Team USA, five-man rotations.
Yeah. Just the every 3 minutes, next five, and then just full court press. It's like just constant bombardment of Hall of Famers.
Imagine you go to your third string lineup and then the other team's like defending Kawhi Leonard. They're like, are you guys fucking serious?
Yeah.
Like we survived LeBron and KD and then they went to Jason Tatum and then we got to deal with Kawhi.
There's no reason to have someone playing big minutes on this team. Just five-man groups. Figure out the five-man groups that work in practice and just keep shuffling them.
How entertaining would it be, though, if this team just, like, combusts under the weight of incredible talent and, you know, FIBA Fournier and Wimby just take them out as LeBron and Jason Tatum, you know, argue over minutes?
Was Bam one of the guys?
Bam, I'm pretty sure, is on the roster, yeah.
I'm trying to think, like, what is the worst five-man unit you could make? It's like Bam, Tyrese Haliburton, LeBron James, Booker, and Tatum. Is that like, the bottom five? Just one of the most insane combinations already. I mean, maybe that's not, maybe it's, I don't know, not Curry, not Durant. It's really good. So I at least wanted to bring that in here for just a minute. But we do have Bucks, Pacers, currently 19-15 going on, that I'd like to go watch this game. Gentlemen, do we have any other playoff takes? Anything that bold predictions you want to put out on a recorded podcast for the world to see?
The Celtics are going to sweep the Eastern Conference.
Love it. I mean, I hate it because I don't want to see good things happen in Boston, but that's a good take. Don't you look like you got something?
No, I'm trying to think of something that isn't just homerism. I'm still high on a big Clippers win, okay?
You don't want to say Nuggets going to sweep the West?
No, because the Clippers are going to beat them in the finals, in the conference finals.
Boom. There we go.
Not even I believe that. Come on.
No, Nate, you gotta edit that part out where Dylan says he doesn't believe it. He does believe it. The audience will never know he doesn't believe it.
I'm keeping the faith.
Aaron, where can the people find you?
Possible Chairs on TikTok, Possible Chairs on Twitter, my Patreon, my all-time list that me and Nate made, top 75 for position, top 300 of all time, other all-time write-ups like essays on the best players, the Magic Johnson write-up that one day I will finish and post, and this podcast occasionally.
Dylan, where can people find you?
On this podcast, all of the time, whether you like it or not.
You can find me, Nate_HoopsTemple, on TikTok. You can email us, hoopstemple@gmail.com. And you can watch the pod on YouTube, just the Hoops Temple podcast. Search it, find us, get to see our beautiful faces, two mustaches and a beard. You know, that's what we're here for. Hope you all have a great week. Enjoy your playoff basketball.